have we as Americans become a part of a mediocre society? And then one U.S. Postal Service worker's fight that could change everything about work and so much more. Let's go. All right, folks, I'm a little bit excited about this because it's time for a wake-up call, and there's nothing scary about this, but we're going to talk about fear, and it needs to be talked about. America is becoming mediocre, and I want to give you some data. The UN Human Development Index, which measures things like the economics in a country, the life expectancy, education, schooling, performance, and a host of other things. But those are three big categories. Quality of life, essentially. Number 21 is where America lands on that list. Well, that's not too great. How about number 15 on the World Happiness Report? Now, I don't bring this up to say that we're trying to win these competitions on these lists, but when you start to measure the things that are behind this and you see our economy and you see the personality of this nation, which is so fraught with tension, I'm not surprised. Now, I'm here to help you win at work so that you can win in life, because you can't win in life if you're not winning at work. So more money and more meaning, or enough money and enough meaning, money and meaning, this is how we help you win at work and at life, and this is going to contribute tremendously to your happiness. So that's why I'm breaking this down. We're going to look at our culture, and if we look at the American culture, and I would say that this is a global problem that I'm going to address, this slide to mediocrity, this embrace of average. Where does it come from? Fear. And I want to tell you where it's coming from before I unpack what it's doing to you, to me, to everybody else. How is fear driving our culture to mediocrity? I'll unpack it at the end or in just a moment, but I first want you to see, where is the fear coming from? Well, there's three channels: marketing, politics, and the media. Those are the three channels that profit from fear. So therefore, they produce it. The more those channels of our society produce fear, the more they profit. So they can't stop. So I present this as a bit of a conundrum here, because I'm telling you it's not going to stop. Marketing is not going to stop scaring you. Politicians are not going to stop scaring you. And the media is not going to stop scaring you. So what are we left with? Okay, we need to understand that that's what they're doing and how it affects our decisions. And then we decide how we are going to act moving forward. So, how does marketing scare us? Well, it always leads with this problem that you have. And there are types of marketing that can be problem-focused that are not fear-mongering. But so much of what affects our lives is the fear-mongering of danger. Now, I could market my stuff and say, look, you've got a problem if you're bored at work. You've got a problem if you are in a toxic environment. But that's not fear-mongering. Fear-mongering is watching a commercial where maybe a mother is in the car with her kids and it's rainy outside and dark and hard to see, and all of a sudden the car swerves and we're left to wonder, are they going to make it? And they barely make it. And the reason they make it is because of those awesome tires. Right? And so they take us to the point of death here, and all of a sudden you're left with, if I don't have good tires, maybe those tires, I could be responsible for my death and my kid's death. And so all of a sudden I got to go buy four new tires. I could go on and on and on. I don't need to. In fact, Let's go back to when this actually became a thing in marketing. Fear in advertising goes all the way back to the 1920s when Listerine created mouthwash as a way to combat bad breath. The initial advertising campaign centered around Jane, a gorgeous young woman who struggled to get married because of her bad breath. And for those of you watching, there is the original ad. Look at it. Halitosis makes you unpopular. And look at Jane. Jane's lovely, isn't she? And Jane is sitting in this luxurious hotel lobby, alone and despondent. And look at this other handsome man and this other woman there embracing because their breath smells good. And they are experiencing love because of Listerine. But Jane is lonely because she doesn't have Listerine. And thus, fear-based marketing took a hold. Now, the other channel is politics. Politicians on both sides of the aisle will go on the media. They will go into direct mail campaigns. They will send you email. They will campaign at events, and they will speak, and they will demonize their opponent and the opponent's party. It's happening on both sides, and they tell you that your life will be awful if you don't vote for them to stop the evil on the other side. And then the media, you watch local news, they're the absolute worst. There's an old phrase in the news industry, if it bleeds, it leads. And that is the most, you know, stark explanation of what I'm talking about. That's what insiders say. This person died. This person was kidnapped. These people had a fight. This burned down. It's bad, 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 because it awakens your amygdala, the survival instinct. So we are becoming overwhelmed, and we are overwhelmed, I would say to you, already. And then every day is just piling on top of more and more and more and more. And it never stops because of our digital media, social media. It's everywhere, and it's designed to scare us, to get us to pay attention. And so we are constantly living in a survival state. So how does this play out to winning at work and winning in life? What happens when we're afraid all the time? Well, the human spirit longs for adventure. We want to make a difference. And so when we are confident, we want to step out and do things and try things, we go for it. But when we are fearful, the fight or flight part of our brain, the amygdala, we get into survival mode. So confidence drives action and growth. Fear pulls us back in to protect ourselves. So confidence drives action and growth. Fear drives safety and vigilance. And it's just kind of like, I'm always looking for something bad to happen. So if I'm always looking around the corner, I'm using the word vigilance here because I want to stay safe, because I'm constantly being told that I should be afraid. And I'm looking around the corner all the time. Guess what I'm not looking at? I'm not looking at my goals, my vision for my life. I'm constantly looking for the next thing that's going to threaten me, and I'm not looking forward. And so that's why America has become mediocre, is we're all just trying to survive. We stopped trying to thrive. Helping you get unstuck from those mental hurdles of fear and doubt so that you can move forward in clarity and confidence to live the life that you desire. And that includes doing work that you love, that you're good at, that makes things happen that you desire to make happen. If you're enjoying this show, it's helping you. Would you help us? If you're watching via YouTube, would you like the videos, share, comments, and subscribe? All three of those things are just one little way, or two ways, or three ways to help spread the word. It's all about the algorithm. We want to serve this up to as many people as possible. If you're listening via the podcast, would you give us a follow on whatever podcast platform you are following or listening? And a five-star review, please. That all helps us grow. All right, we are two days away, if you will, from my first event, a solo event. Grateful to get out on the road and just do a version of what I do on the show. Going to teach for a little bit, but more importantly, we're going to meet people in these intimate theaters in Kansas City, Chicago, Atlanta, and Dallas. And it's called Breakthrough because we're going to take people's questions. Where are you struggling? What's holding you back? And we're going to do it in a great, fun, small, and intimate environment where everybody's juiced up and ready to go. We're coming to Kansas City, Missouri, April 20th. It's going to be a fantastic event. All the details. That's just two nights from today, April 20th, Thursday, April 20th this week, Kansas City, Missouri. Then you've got three cities in May, Chicago, May 16th, Atlanta, May 18th, Dallas, Texas, May 23rd. All of the details and tickets. We even have a VIP opportunity to spend some time early together, you and I. And you can get all the details and tickets at kencoleman.com/events, kencoleman.com/events. Kansas City, come on. We still have a few seats left. We're approaching sellout. It's going to be a lot of fun. Union Station is the area down there. The NFL draft there next week. So a lot of buzz down there. Can't wait to see you. All right, a couple stories I want to get to that we need to address as it relates to the world of work. This story here, USA Today, this is now before the Supreme Court as I speak. Maybe still on the docket, may already be off the docket. I don't know. I haven't looked at the news. But this is based around the case of Gerald Groff, who is a U.S. Postal Service employee who has, for many, many years, requested to spend his Sundays off. He'll work extra hours other days, work holidays for others, but he does not want to work on Sundays. He wants to observe the Sabbath based on his religious beliefs and convictions. And so now this has gone all the way to the Supreme Court. And there are a lot of people watching this because of not just the actual 1977 Supreme Court ruling that this is going to be taking on, but also, what could this conservative Supreme Court do? How will it affect the workplace as it relates to, well, I am asking for this based on my religious beliefs? So let's just give you the context for this as we watch this, and then I'll give you some areas to be paying attention to and how it could affect you and the workplace. The 1977 Supreme Court decision allowed employers to deny religious requests like this one if they present more than a trivial cost. So the standard based on that decision is what Groff's attorneys are arguing, and they believe it means that companies could decline to alter schedules to account for a Sabbath or allow an employee's religious dress in too many circumstances. So the Supreme Court basically said, look, you can't deny an employee's request around a religious belief if the request does not cost you substantive time, effort, and money. The idea was if it's trivial and it's really not affecting anything, the point was you can't just say no because you disagree with it. And so that was the decision. And critics like Rachel Laser, critics of this case, anti-Groff's position. Rachel Laser is the president of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. And they're saying, well, now this is going to open up a can of worms, and it's going to let people shift the cost of exercising their religion onto their coworkers in a way that harms them, blah, 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 blah. But again, the current 1977 decision would not allow that if it created work problems and schedule problems that were significant, then the current case would hold up. So whether he wins or not, I don't know. I don't know which way it's going. I think there's a middle ground here where, you know, someone wants to observe the Sabbath, and as a leader, you can figure out the schedule. You know, I'm for that. But putting others at disadvantage, well, then that already has a statute. That it doesn't matter what my opinion is. That's already the law of the land. So it is interesting, but where this gets really tricky is if this expands and now you got people using religion as a very convenient excuse. And that's where this gets tricky. We will watch this and keep an eye on it. Quick comment on the separation of church and state for my growing audience. I'm not going to give an opinion here as much as state a fact, and I would encourage you to go do your research. Go research the actual U.S. Constitution. Here's my homework assignment if you'd like to dive into this more. And look for the phrase separation of church and state. Look for the phrase in the Constitution. You will find it is not there. The concept comes from a letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote to John Leland, who was a traveling pastor who had been jailed for being a Baptist, if you can believe that, in Virginia in the 1700s. I just want my audience to be educated. I want you to go look at the letter and read what Jefferson wrote to Leland and make your own conclusions. How about that, Alex? How about that for just little education? I'm not going to take an opinion on it. I just want you all to go do your homework out there. And then, you know what? Then you can comment away. All right, second question. That this is a little bit, this is a little bit more of a warning to those of you in my audience that are leaders. I think this is a warning to be aware of now an overreaction that has gotten out of control and it's doing little to nothing, even though it looks like it's something. How about that for a setup? Here it is. More and more executives believe that giving the entire company mental health days is what is needed to retain and attract employees in this, let's call it now, if we look at 2021, we're talking about a two-year period, 2 years plus, of high volume of people quitting their job every month. It's about 4+ million that's still holding steady or just changing jobs like this. It's just musical chairs. Okay? And so executives are rightfully going, what's going on? What do we need to do to retain and attract workers? Well, mental health has become the buzzword. We're seeing from my friends at Gallup data that says engagement is at an all-time high. Disengagement, excuse me, is at an all-time high. And this is what Gallup said. Now, I want you to track this. Gallup's going disengagement's at historic highs, and the reason is people don't feel cared for at work. They're stressed out of their mind because they're overworked. They are passed over. They are not valued, undervalued is what we're talking about here. And so they're stressed out and they want to leave. So what do a bunch of executives think we need to do? Mental health days. Company-wide, the whole company just takes off and we get mentally healthy. Sounds great, doesn't it? Early on, Alex, I said some of these things are good, but now it's gotten out of control. Now we're coming up with on-site respite rooms. Good heavenly days. Respite rooms? This is like a nap room where you can just go, my mental health is fraying and I need to go over here and take a nap. Because, you know, mental health. It's gotten out of control, folks. You know what it is now? It's an arms race. Here's what leaders aren't doing. They aren't fixing what's causing the actual stress, which is your poor leadership and not valuing people and give them what they need. Let's just throw mental health days at it. It's a Band-Aid, folks.
You make this rather snappy, won't you? I have some very heavy thinking to do before 10 o'clock.
All right, how many parents do I have out there who your kids are still in school and you're thinking, down the road here, we're going to have to figure out what their future looks like, and I as a parent got to do that. Man, that's important to me, but good gracious, that's scary. I don't want to think about it. All right, you get a pass if your kids are in elementary school, but if they're in middle school and high school, pay attention. We have created something I've been dreaming about. I've worked with our team at Ramsey Ed, which has got financial curriculum from Ramsey Solutions in almost 50% of our nation's public schools. And so we've come out with the first version of a curriculum called Foundations in Career Discovery. We need to be teaching young people how to handle their money, but we also need to be teaching young people how to discover their uniqueness and come up with ideas that they can explore in their high school age, explore in the college age, as opposed to them making them just go to school and trying to pick a major out of thin air. The course is only $49.99. That's for one student for 1 year. It's a home study. They do it at home. Parents, you could do it alongside of them. We even have some parent materials, and I have some special videos for you parents to encourage you and equip you to have these conversations, because you're not being given this from our school systems. Additional students could be added for $30 a year. All the details at kencoleman.com/student. You're going to get a free teacher account. That's for you, the parent. Or if a teacher, you want to do this outside of school, however you want to do that, you know, we'll figure it out. And then you get additional resources for the teacher, plus student progress tracking and a grade book. Folks, it's Foundations in Career Discovery. I'm so excited. Get it for you, for your kids, for other family members. And let's create a movement by which we, the people, take charge of helping kids discover their uniqueness early on and thus have an opportunity to try several things, to experiment, to choose something that lights them up. Check it out, kencoleman.com/student. All right, let's go to Kayla now in Columbus, Ohio. Kayla, you're on the Ken Coleman Show.
Hey there, Mr. Coleman. How's it going?
I'm living the dream. What's going on?
Hey, so something you said a few minutes ago just totally set me up for my call with you. Perfect timing.
Good.
You said not working is not healthy, and I can tell you 100% that is so true.
What's going on? What's the evidence you've got?
Yeah, well, my life.
Yeah.
So I quit working about 8 years ago due to health challenges.
Mm.
And I am so done with not working for so many reasons that I'm like at the point where I'm like, okay, the disability I'm dealing with is here. But instead of looking at the disability and how it's making it to where I cannot work, what do I have and what, how can I know my work already. I've gone through all this and you've helped me with this and I've gotten qualified and all of that.
Okay.
But how can I not focus and magnify what I can't do and focus on what I can do to still make this business work? And then how can I maybe, I'm hoping maybe you can help me brainstorm a little. How can I develop the business? Maybe it looks a little different than how everyone else sees it. And come up with a way to where I can still do it. Maybe a different structure than the traditional way.
Okay, so you're hitting me with a call. I got to get a little bit more specific. So
sure.
I'm going to use some tactics you use with people in coaching. So what is the biggest challenge you're facing right now? What specifically? Is it the physical challenge that you're dealing with?
Okay. Yep.
How does it affect you? Or let me put it this way. How does it limit your ability to do coaching?
So for me, I got to be able to show up, right? And my big challenge is not always being able to be so like cognitively alert. I can not schedule when I get like a complete knockout and I just can't focus.
Right.
So trying to show up for my client and be able to focus on them when I can hardly even think straight or keep myself awake.
Right. Well, I'm not a medical doctor, so I'm very limited on this. But if I'm putting myself in your shoes, I'm wondering, are there certain times that I'm able to anticipate this, or is it just out of nowhere and it's just part?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's at random. And that's why I'm trying to think, is there some way I can structure outside of a traditional coaching format, you know, that maybe I can still work coaching somehow without just.
It's hard to coach somebody when you're not with them. It's hard to cook,
yeah.
You know, certainly you could start to try to look at, can I create some courses or let's try one course that would walk people through a lot of what I do in my coaching. Is this financial coaching, career coaching? What is it?
Courage and purpose coaching for women.
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry, confidence and purpose coaching for women.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. So, you know, can you create some courses that people could take? And it's a little different model. You're not sitting knee to knee with them, but you are taking maybe your core thoughts and you are saying, okay, I've got this course and people take it. And you try to move to an online model. I just don't know how you I mean, your clients are going to have to be flexible, but that becomes, no matter how nice they are about it, becomes very frustrating, and that's the source of your question, right?
Yeah, and here's kind of a part two to my question, where I'm kind of wondering, too, I definitely have the physical limitation, but I also know that dealing with this limitation for so long has kind of taken some of my own confidence, I think, to show up. And I was in an appointment yesterday with actually my therapist, and she said, you show up every time, twice a week, for how many months now you haven't missed an appointment? And I thought, the difference is someone's not counting on me to do the thinking. But I feel like, am I maybe lacking the confidence? Is that partially holding me back too?
Well, there's
and
no
how
question.
Can I get past
there's no question.
That myself?
Well, so I'm not a counselor. I'm curious to know what your therapist said.
Yeah, I didn't dive into that. It was just kind of a thought that hit me after
okay,
she said
well,
it.
All right, so
we weren't
here's
talking
how,
about this.
Okay, so here's what I think about confidence. I really believe confidence appears when we are extremely clear on what is true and what is not true. And so mm-hmm. your confidence is shaken because you've had to reschedule appointments, or maybe you've been in the middle of an appointment and things started to go downhill. Is that what I'm understanding? That's why you've lacked confidence, because your body quits on you.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so the question becomes, are you able to somehow hack that? For instance, I'm trying to be very specific here, because if I was in your shoes, my confidence would be related to, can I get through a coaching session? It's one thing to wake up one day and have a bad day and need to reschedule.
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing to be maybe sitting knee to knee with somebody and you're in an hour-long session or a 50-minute session and you're 20 minutes in and all of a sudden you feel your body starting to fail you. The question is, can mm-hmm. you hack that? Is there some type of nutritional, physical, some sort of way to aid yourself that while you're not at your best, you're still able to give quality coaching?
Yeah.
Is there?
I don't know, but I mean, I could maybe try to explore.
What do your doctors say? I mean, is this just an energy issue due to the physical disabilities?
No.
Then what is
it? No, it's beyond energy. It's like, I think effects from like the Lyme disease.
Yeah.
So it can just kind of hit at any time. And
see, listen, that stinks. There's very little you can do about that. That's why I've been very, you know, kind of like, I understand the confidence piece, but getting clear that I can actually get through this session, well, I don't think it can in this case. If the body through the Lyme disease begins to just attack your energy and everything else, you can't grit your way through that. So what I think you need to start to do is you need to start to take a different style of coaching. Because of your physical mm-hmm. limitations where it could affect your energy, your ability to show up, I think you start developing materials and go to an online webinar type model where maybe, you know, you've pre-taped it and it kind of leads people through and you are coaching them, but it's more of an instructional guide, not a back and forth. Does that make sense? I think that's the direction to go. Because see, you've got good content, you know what to do. So begin to create some webinars, begin to test this stuff. See if we can productize those. You know, ebooks, let's put them out for free and test it and see if we can do more with it. Because you're going to have to coach a different way. But I don't think you stop coaching. This is the Ken Coleman Show. Press on.
Thanks for listening to the Ken Coleman Show. For more, you can find the show on demand wherever you listen to podcasts and watch the show on YouTube. You can also find Ken across all social media by following @KenColeman.